sample, it was quite hard to get even a rough location. I nodded. It wasn't common for parents to keep samples of their children's blood. I wondered sourly just how many parents were rethinking that policy. Kidnapping for ransom wasn't entirely unknown, but we'd been kidnapped by people who had no intention of returning us. It was every parent's nightmare. And if it had happened to the two most powerful families in the city, it could happen to anyone. The simple fact that the person behind Feruza had never been identified would chill every parent to the bone.
"Go get some rest," Dad ordered. "You'll be going back to school tomorrow."
"Understood," I said. I wasn't sure how I felt. I didn't want to hide away in the hall, yet going back to school had its own dangers. 2 months ago, everyone had known that Jude's was neutral ground. Now, old certainties were falling everywhere. "Come on, Rose. I'll show you my room." Rose shrank into me as we walked up the stairs. I held her hand gently. The hall had to seem like a whole other world to her. And yet, I turned as soon as we were in the room. "Are you all right?"
"My head feels funny,"
Rose said. She stroked her hair. "But otherwise, I'm alive." "That's something," I said. "Did you write to your parents?"
"I don't think they know what happened," Rose said. "Did anyone tell them?"
I frowned. I didn't know. "We'll find out," I promised. If Rose's parents didn't know, should we tell them? Or should we keep it a secret? It would only upset them. "And if they don't know, we can decide what to do."
"Thanks,"
Rose said. She glanced around.
"Is there a bathroom here?"
I pointed.
"Over there."
As soon as she was in the bathroom, I walked across the room and opened the bag. The scroll was where I'd left it, buried under a handful of tools. It didn't look as if anyone had read it, although there was no way to be sure. I hadn't been able to rig up any protections for my bag. Dad could have looked at any moment. It was a priceless scroll. I knew historians would sell their souls to get a look at it. And yet, I knew I should drop the scroll in the fire. It was too dangerous. Anyone who knew the truth behind magic could use it. I'd taken a hellish risk by not destroying it the moment I finished reading it. "I'm sorry," I thought. "But it has to remain a secret." Quite calmly, I dropped the scroll into the fire and watched it burn. Chapter 40.
"So you made a flying machine," Magister Tallyman said. "And it flew."
I bent over the sword, trying to ignore him. It had been an odd couple of days, once we'd returned to school. The tutors had been very gentle with us. The students had either asked questions or made sympathetic remarks. It had made me want to scream. Sandy and everyone else in the dorm had been nice to me, even Isabella. It had been a relief when I'd finally been able to sneak into the workshop and start repairing the sword.
"Aiken tells me it flew badly," Magister Tallyman added. "But at least it flew."
"It did," I confirmed. I checked my calculations when I'd had a chance. I hadn't made any mistakes as far as I could tell. But I'd failed to take certain factors into account. It would probably take some time to recalibrate everything after I built the next flying machine. And then Dad would have to be talked into letting me fly it. It got us out of a hole. I put the next gemstone into place, then checked my work carefully. The sword had been cleaned thoroughly, and the runes re-etched. I thought it would become an object of power again when I inserted the last gemstone. But I wasn't sure. I'd have to devise a whole series of experiments to discover how the magic field actually worked,
once I had a chance to sit down and work on them. The surge of energy as the spell form collapsed might just have broken the sword beyond repair. But at least we'll know if the sword can be repaired or not, I thought wryly. And knowing is half the battle. I wished Magister Tallyman would go away as I continued my inspection. I liked him. I did like him. And yet I didn't want to talk to him. He might figure out that I was keeping something to myself, even if he didn't know what. I hadn't dared face Magister Niven either. Not now. He'd know I'd solved the mystery, and then what? Better the secret dies with me, I told myself firmly. At least until we know if the magic really is going away. I sighed. Could the magic run out? Could the magic go away, or what? The field could be drained or weakened in a limited area. I knew that to be true. But could it go away permanently? What would happen if it did? Could the world survive? Humans could live without magic. I would never have been born if I needed magic to live. But what about the creatures that relied on magic? They might simply vanish when the magic went away. If the magic goes away, I thought. The 1,000-year empire used magic for over 1,000 years, and it still took an object of power to wreck the Eternal City.
We can start work on a new flying machine, Magister Tallyman said. Wouldn't it be nice to fly?
Perhaps, I said, rolling my eyes. I slotted the last gemstone into place, then stepped backwards. Let's see. The sword blazed with blinding light. I covered my eyes hastily, turning my head to escape the glare. A crackling sound ran through the room, loud enough to make me jump and throw myself to the ground. And then the light and noise just vanished. I looked at Magister Tallyman. He dropped to the floor too, and then stood, turning to look at the blade. It was lying on the table, glowing faintly with light. I hesitated, then reached for it slowly. The hilt felt cold against my hand, but the sword was too heavy to lift. It seemed to be stuck to the table.
Let me try, Magister Tallyman said.
He took the hilt and tried to lift the blade. It refused to budge.
Interesting.
It's still bloodbound to someone, I said. It would be possible to move the blade, as long as we didn't actually touch it with our bare skin. But there was no way we could use it. Whoever had owned the original blade wasn't related to either of us. Who owned it originally?
Good question, Magister Tallyman said.
He shrugged.
We might as well let everyone try to lift the blade.
I shrugged. If you wish, sir, I said. I was too tired to argue. My parents had warned me that sooner or later everything that we'd gone through would hit us, and yet it was hard to care. Can I get on with my work?
Of course,
Magister Tallyman said. He waved a hand at the desk.
Just let anyone who wants to try to lift the sword have a go, will you?
He turned and left. I sighed, wondering precisely who owned the sword now. He'd said I could have it, but the blade was useless to me unless I somehow broke the blood bond without destroying the sword completely. I didn't think it was possible. And if we did find someone who could lift the blade, they might lodge a claim to it that would supersede our rights. Dad would not be pleased. One political crisis at a time, I thought. We still don't know who backed Feruza. The next hour went slowly, very slowly. I would have gotten more done if a couple of dozen students hadn't sauntered into the room, tried to pick up the sword and then flounced out again in a huff. A handful tried to ask me for more commissions, but I turned them down quickly. I just didn't have time to do private work as well as catch up with my classmates, even though I suspected it was a waste of time. There was no way I could pass the practical exams, and without them, I wasn't sure how much my grade would be worth. Aiken peered into the room.
Dinner soon, he said as he stepped inside. How are you?
I've been better, I said. I studied him for a long moment. How are you?
Coping, Aiken said. My father was not pleased.
He didn't look as though he was coping, I thought. His eyes were shadowed, suggesting that he wasn't sleeping very well. I hadn't slept well over the last couple of days either. Rose had had nightmares as well, to the point where she'd had to beg a sleeping draught from the healers. I worried about her more than I worried about myself. Rose's family still didn't know about our little adventure.
I don't blame him, I said.
Does he have any suspects?
Plenty, but no proof, Aiken said. And he's not happy at having to work with your father either.
I shrugged. I thought we were meant to be the kids here. Aiken smiled.
We're too young to care about adult stuff, he said. But even Isabella was glad to see me home.
I think Alana was glad too, I said. But she'll never admit it.
Probably, Aiken agreed.
He looked at the door.
Did he start nagging you to build another flying machine?
Yeah, I said. And I will, when I have the chance.
Maybe you should wait a while, Aiken said. Or let someone else fly it.
I grinned. Not a chance. Aiken smiled back.
I understand, he said.
He changed the subject suddenly.
Will you consider swearing a blood oath with me? Now.
I blinked in surprise. Now?
Soon, Aiken said.
He sighed heavily.
This feud needs to stop.
I still don't know if I can swear a blood oath, I said. And what would your father say?
I wasn't planning to tell him, Aiken said. Not until afterwards, at any rate. It would be too late for him to argue.
He might disown you, I warned. Aiken's father had a spare. Isabella would be delighted if she had an unchallengeable claim to succeed her father. Are you sure you want to take the risk? Aiken pointed to the workbench.
I can survive on my own, he said. What about your father?
I shrugged. I didn't think my father would disown me, and if he did, my talents were unique. I could think of a dozen people, starting with Magister Tallyman, who would be happy to employ me. Dad would know it too. We'll think about it, I promised. On one hand, he was right. On the other, there was no way to know what would happen if we swore the oath. And Rose needs to know what she's getting into too. We sat in companionable silence for a long moment. I thought back to Tyrus and his companions, a man and a woman who'd brought down an empire. What could I do if I put my mind to it? What were the limits of the possible? And what would happen if I built something like his magic draining device? Part of me wanted to see if I could build one. The rest of me knew it would be dangerous. A world without magic would be a world without civilization. It would be a nightmare without end. Do some experiments, I told myself, and then figure out what you can safely tell others. I looked at him. If I gave you a protective bracelet, I said, would you wear it? Aiken frowned.
Why?
It might be interesting to see how it felt for you, I said. It wasn't entirely true. I knew Rose couldn't use magic while wearing protective earrings. There was no reason to assume it wouldn't be different for Aiken. But what if he tried to forge while wearing one? I've been doing a lot of research into how objects of power interact with magic.
But you can't feel anything yourself, Aiken finished.
Unless it grows hot, I agreed. It was a shame I needed to keep the amulet, or earring, touching my bare skin. I'd have to make myself a suit of armor when I had a spare moment. but I wanted to know how it felt for you. I smiled as a thought struck me. If I could craft a magic-free bubble, could I cut Aiken off from his powers? And if I did, could he forge objects of power while he was in the bubble? Or would that block the object of power from touching the magic field too? More research, I told myself firmly. And perhaps I should carry it out somewhere a little more private. Rose tapped on the door. She looked pale. Dinner time, she said. And then the library. I rose. Definitely. We have a lot of work to do. Rose looked past me. Is that the famous sword? Apparently, I agreed. Try and pick it up. I heard Henrietta claiming she would be able to take it, Rose said. She wrapped her fingers around the hilt, but the sword refused to move. She said her family's insignia was clearly visible on the blade. Aiken stood and inspected the sword.
I can't see it, he said.
He looked at me.
Can you?
There was nothing beyond the runes, I said. The dinner bell rang. Do you want to try to pick up the blade before we go?
Yeah, Aiken said. Why not?
His hand curved around the hilt and lifted. And the blade glowed brightly as he held it in the air. You have been listening to The Zero Curse, Book 2 of The Zero Enigma, produced by Greg Lawrence, Associate Producer Emily Durr. Text copyright 2017 by Christopher G. Nussel. Production copyright 2017 by Podium Publishing. All rights reserved. If you enjoyed this audiobook, let us know. Take a quick moment to rate and review it on Audible, so we know we're bringing you audiobooks you'll love.
Audible hopes you have enjoyed this program.